World-class Jim Crockett Promotions, Big Time Wrestling, Mid-South. $2 Late Fee presents Territory Marks with Paul London and Zach Schaefer. The show that celebrates matches from the glory days of professional wrestling. From one man who lives it and another man who loves it.
Alright, Paul, it's episode 5. Some people consider this a lucky number. I consider it a lucky number too. I think this episode is going to be filled with lightning bolts. A lot of lightning bolts in this episode.
As there should be. What else would you expect from professional wrestling than to be struck by lightning? Right? I mean, come on.
Greater tragedies in life have resulted from said lightning. You brought a match to the table. I brought a match to the table that are going to be really unique and special yet again. This episode is coming off the heels of our $2 six question segment with Jill Scholin. We just launched that one. Jill Scholin, of course, from genre people love her from Stepfather, Popcorn,
yeah.
The Curse, Bite Part 2. I love her from That Was Then, This Is Now. I love her from, a movie called Thunder Alley from 1985.
I don't know that one.
I think you need to watch that one. Thunder Alley stars Jill Scholin, Leif Garrett.
Okay.
And Clancy Brown.
Oh, gotta love Mr. Krabs.
Yeah, so it is canon. It's a canon movie.
Love
it's
it.
Canon's answer to, A Star Is Born. it's a precursor to La Bamba. It's got these elements of rock and roller, who is afraid to grab the golden ring, but his buddy pushes him into it. But then his buddy brings him down. It's a lot of great tunes. Great music in it. It's free on YouTube.
I can hear Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus being like, you know what? Maybe we didn't do so well with the apple, but let's go back and let's try a music movie again. I have an idea for Thunder Alley.
Yes, it's set in Thunder Alley is a real place in Arizona. It's going to be great. We can go there and film, and spend like an obscene amount of money on location and nothing on actor, because who cares about actor? Like, it's just meat. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
You've seen Death Wish, Charles Bronson, and everyone else. Who cares? Jeff Goldblum? Never become a big actor someday.
But we get Leif Garrett, Academy Award. Jill Scholin, Academy Award. I can see it right now. Let's order the takeout and let's eat in the office and make sure don't throw away the trays because we can use them again.
Yes, go get that guy in the lobby who's always complaining. He wants to be in movie. Jean-Claude Van Garbage. Yeah. What is his name?
It's with the splits and the kicks and the tight pants. I like him. I like his butt. Let's make him big star. Big star.
Yes, he does great one-cheek sneak. He gets cigarette to go out with his tukis.
Yes, yes. I think he's doing movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger right now.
Yes.
Mexico. Big alien.
Going to be blockbuster.
Yes, yes. But we'll get him fired off of that. We have three-picture deal in mind. Anyways, yes, Thunder Alley. It'll be beautiful.
Well, Thunder Alley, actually, and it just dawned on me as we're talking about Menachem Golan. It came out in 1985. Your match is from 1985 as well. So
big whopper. And I will sneak in. I know we're kind of just touching a few things on pop culture here, but you know me, I like to really I'm not so much a glass half full or half empty guy. I'm a glass overflowing kind of guy.
That's for sure.
I'll rock you later in due time with the top 10. I don't think there's any canon there. I think there is actually. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, I hope there's a connection to my childhood yet again, because it gave me an excuse in the last episode to play clips from when I was playing with my toys when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. So shouting out Bravestar.
I still play with them. Actually, my recent trip to Cleveland, my good buddy Chris from Bulletproof Action, who's one of our faithful listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Gifted me this amazing Scarecrow from Super Friends.
Wow, it's a Mego doll, Mego inspired doll, the Scarecrow figure from the Super Friends cartoon from the 80s,
right.
And oh my gosh, it is so amazing.
It's creepy.
Super creepy. That's nightmare inducing. Almost as nightmare inducing as the Night of the Scarecrow movie that came out back in the day with Charles Durning. Did you ever see that one?
Are you talking about Dark Knight of the Scarecrow?
Yeah, sorry, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Yeah, with Larry Drake.
Yes, playing yet again another special needs person.
Right, he was really good at those. You know, it was a bit of a precursor for Dr. Giggles.
Well, he comes out in Darkman, and I'm like, Darkman? Because I think he was in Darkman 3 or Darkman 2, Die, Darkman, Die, one of those movies.
The first three, I think he played Durant, or Durand.
He was in the first three.
Yeah, he was the big bad guy.
And I'm like, how can I take this guy seriously after seeing him be such a goofy
doughboy? I love Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. I think that's one of the most underrated TV movies. I mean, I could say ever because I'm an overflowing glass kind of guy, but certainly of the, was that early 80s, right? Or was
it was. It was. Actually, I broke it down with my co-host Corey on Podcasting After Dark. Scene by scene, we broke that movie down.
Oh, wow.
And we determined that it is a very underrated classic 80s film.
He plays Bubba.
That is dark as hell.
Bubba, the ill-fated, slow country hick.
Yeah, and Charles Durning playing the most evil son of a bitch I've ever seen.
That's
ever.
Right. And then he would go on later to be a special type in L.A. Law, wasn't it? Was that his?
Larry Drake, yeah.
Yeah, Larry Drake. Oh, he's great.
I think he got an Emmy for that. He might have got an Emmy for that.
If not that, then hopefully, I hope he got some sort of consideration for Dr. Giggles, at least.
Charles Durning went on. Well, no. He was either right before this or right after this. He was in Tootsie.
Oh, yeah.
Making the moves on Dustin Hoffman, and he was so bummed out when he found out Dustin Hoffman was a dude.
Oh, man. How foretelling to the times we are in.
I know.
You know, I'm curious if Jill Sholin went out for Dr. Giggles, because it seems like it would have been right in that kind of time period. I know that it was...
I think, yeah, Dr. Giggles came out in 92, I believe,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And she retired, if you guys listen to her interview, if not, check it out. She retired in 1991 from acting for quite some time.
Dang.
To raise a family.
Interesting. Well,
and now she's back.
Oh, she is back. That's great.
Yep, she's back in the New York groove. I can't talk about the movie she's doing right now because they're currently being shot and filmed and bada bing, bada boom. But she's got some fun stuff in the down in the pipe.
Dr. Giggles 2. You never know. It's never too late.
Dr. Giggles 2, die. Dr. Giggles, die.
Right, right. An apple a day will kill you. I don't
know. I'm coming out of retirement to make Dr. Giggles part 4.
Oh.
The return of the Root Canal.
What?
Rest in peace, Menachem. Rest in peace.
I'm coming back from the grave.
I would.
I'm going to go down to the pizza kitchen in Sherman Oaks, California.
Pita kitchen's great.
I lived right above that place.
Did you really?
My first spot when I moved to LA. Yep.
Van Nuys and Dickens?
Yeah.
I lived right off of Dickens.
Oh, you did?
Corner. That was my first spot in LA as well.
Dude.
The box was at Dickens Box on the corner right there.
I was friends with the people that lived down there or that owned that place.
Really nice. Yeah. Very nice Asian family.
Yep.
Very nice. Yeah, I love Pita Kitchen. They know me by name at Pita Kitchen, believe it or not. That's how often I went
Whoa.
there.
Wow, do they have picture on the wall of you next to Menahem?
No, they did not want to pay the $20 for autograph photo, but that's okay. We got plenty of their plasticware and brought it back to the office.
That's good. Do you know that the little newsstand that's next to the Pita Kitchen was used in the movie Jake Speed?
Oh, really? I'm not familiar with
Yeah.
JP, but I'm not surprised because that was a glorious newsstand.
It sure
Allowed
was.
you to browse for 5 minutes.
Yeah. You haven't seen Jake Speed, then you have not seen a fantastic Romancing the Stone-esque ripoff film. It's wonderful. New World Pictures.
Love it.
Yeah.
Around the corner from that said newsstand, going west on Van Nuys was actually the stone facade is still there because I don't know if you remember, there was a great secondhand DVD CD record store called Second Spin.
Yes, I
Yeah,
sure do.
that was my go-to spot. But right next to that was the famous Sherman Oaks Karate, which was owned by Chuck Norris for a while and was the karate dojo featured at the beginning of No Retreat, No Surrender.
Oh, wow.
So that whole bit right there is right off of Ventura. That whole karate dojo there is right off of Ventura. And then later it would go on to it would change ownership. I want to say Ernie Krasnew might have been the last owner. His daughter, Michelle the Mouse Krasnew, was a championship karate competitor featured in Kickboxer 4, The Aggressor. I know, just speechless.
I know, I have nothing to say right now. I'm
I mean, you can't go wrong with Sasha Mitchell and Michelle the Mouse Krasnew.
No, anyone who has mouse as a nickname
Well,
is
she was
just
not,
money in my
she
book.
was like 4 feet 11 or something, but championship karate competitor. So,
Right on. What nice. Come on, guys, I'm gonna kick your ass.
I'm gonna treat you like cheese.
Wow.
Oh,
Well, I was trying to find a perfect segue to tee up your match for tonight,
one right for
but
you. I got one right for you because Dr. Giggles, right, was filmed in Portland, Oregon, if you didn't know that. And Portland, Oregon is home to one of the competitors in the match that I chose. A Mr. His shoot name was William Haynes, but he went by the name Billy Jack Haynes, as many would recognize him as Billy Jack Haynes. So
Wow. Well, let's ring that bell.
let's do it.
Your pick for tonight is from the year 1985. Will you tell us who, what, and where, when, how, and why?
Why is debatable. However, yeah, this is a match that aired November 9th, 1985. This is from the Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA. And it is a match between Billy Jack Haynes versus the dubious Thunderfoot with J.J. Dillon as his pesky, mousy manager.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Superstation Championship Challenge Series. Billy Jack Haynes against Thunderfoot, managed by J.J. Dillon.
You know, J.J. made a comment when he was walking into the ring. He said, "We're going to find out what the muscle head is really made of today." I think fans all over the world know what Billy
Honey,
Jack is
look at
made
the
of.
boots. Look at the boots right there. They're two different kinds. And that's what a lot of fans, wrestlers, object to. They say that he has something in one of those boots. A lot of wrestlers swear up and down Billy Jack's got something in those arms, like steel.
You've been
Oh
Thunderfoot!
yeah, and Thunderfoot, I wasn't too familiar with him, but
Thunderfoot.
the shoot name was, well, he was Joel Deaton, and he trained, he got brought in by one of the Andersons. There's like 1,000 of them at this point, but he teamed with David Deaton, and they were the Deaton brothers, But then they went on to form a team known as the Thunderfoots.
Oh, yeah. The Thunderfoots.
Yeah. I mean, would you call them the Thunderfeet? I don't know.
The Thunderfeet.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. So, and the big gimmick with Thunderfoot, and I think this is one of the things that really stood out to me.
Sorry.
Yeah. You just keep them coming. Which foot did it stand out to you on?
Well, I have to tell you in a little bit. I'll have to tell you the Thunderfoot story I have.
I can't wait.
But I'll get to that later.
It sounds like a early Lou Diamond Phillips Val Kilmer project, doesn't it?
Oh, it does.
But I might be mixing up my thunders and feet. but yeah, growing up, I think as you did. I was a big fan of pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Starman was definitely a go-to, if not Amazon.
Oh, same.
You know, and would you say Amazon was probably the precursor for Blanca in Street Fighter?
Oh, for sure. Was Amazon the creature from the Black Lagoon looking one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on your head. And that was, you know, the most annoying attack. When you're playing against somebody using Amazon, it was like, quit biting me. And you'd try to like knock the controller out of their hands so you could kind of get an advantage. Yeah. So, but having loved Tecmo Pro Wrestling, I always really loved Starman, and he was fully covered from head to toe in like a purple outfit with a star on his face.
Yes.
So, Thunderfoot has none of these athletic capabilities that Starman did. However, he is fully covered from head to toe in kind of a silver body suit outfit thing. It's not really a bodysuit because it's not a onesie, but he's fully covered in silver. He's got the lightning on his tights. He's got Thunderfoot, I think, on one side of his tights. And when the camera closes in on his feet, because this was unknown to me, but I quickly took notice and then they filled me in. We had, I want to say, Crockett and Shivani on commentary.
Yes. Yep.
You notice that he's wearing black boots, and one of the boots, his left boot, has white sole, and his right boot has a black sole. So his right boot is completely black boot, black sole, and his left boot is black boot with white sole. And you're sitting there thinking, huh, okay, interesting. So the gimmick is that Thunderfoot would load his boot, which we will see towards the end of this match. And he would use that by kicking opponents in the head and gaining the victory there. So without further ado, we have Billy Jack Haynes versus Thunderfoot. And real quick, I'm going to touch on this note because I found this as I was checking out Billy Jack Haynes' backstory. Yeah, definitely from Portland. He actually went to the Stu Hart dungeon to train. Billy Jack Haynes did. So he trained originally under Stu Hart.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, came up in Portland. If you didn't know that, you can see that he has Oregon across his ass on the tights, which I thought,
in case you forget.
Yeah, just in case, right? But funny enough, he started wrestling under his shoot name and then adopted Billy Jack, and he was just wrestling as Billy Jack until he was threatened by one Tom Laughlin, who threatened to sue him.
Shocker.
For being Billy Jack, and that's why he incorporated his shoot last name onto it as Billy Jack Haynes. So, and for those of you
because
familiar, Tom Laughlin was the title character. He is and was the Billy Jack from the film series. I think they put out, what, 4 or 5 of those?
Something like that. It wasn't titled Billy Jack. The first one was like Born Losers or something like that.
The Born Losers. And has an amazing little soundtrack on it too. But
from the late 60s, I believe. It was around the Vietnam era.
Right. He was like a former Marine who's part Native American. and helped save this small town from a bunch of bikers, a bunch of hoodlums, some born losers.
The first martial art, technically the first American martial art film, I believe.
Oh wow!
And he wore that like a badge of honor.
Oh,
I think he ran for governor of Arizona at some point too, you know, and would always be like, you know, I was in the first American martial art movie.
well, we'll associate that part of this match with the flat brimmed hat title of this segment. So, yeah, I was really impressed. I can't say I had ever actually seen a full Billy Jack Haynes match. I mean, I know that he'd had kind of those chain match feuds with Hercules, you know, in WWF. And he's a big guy. I mean, he's 6'3". He was about 250. Maybe not as standout impressive today when there's so many giants of, you know, that size. But at the time, I mean, this guy was just, he was huge. He was absolutely just a mega star in appearance. And I was really marveling at his ability. Extremely athletic guy.
Well, as David Crockett said, oak arms the size of oak trees.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
He had.
That's right.
I'm like, oh, thank you for the clarification, David Crockett.
Right. Like, we can't see that his arm, his biceps have biceps, which have biceps. I mean, the guy is jacked. Absolutely.
He's jacked.
Yeah. For those who might remember Steve Blackman.
Totally good comparison.
Yeah, very similar. And Steve Blackman, funny enough, trained with the Harts as well. Or initially.
Really?
In the heart, I want to say he trained up in Calgary and began his career early on as a job guy. So, but they have very...
Yeah, vastly underutilized in the WWF.
I agree. And an absolute legit martial artist and badass was Steve Blackman. Actually, someone sent me a clip that Steve Blackman has like a lawman show or something. I need to...
I'll see
send
that.
It to you.
Right on.
Not to be confused with Seagal's lawman. Or Shrek's lawman shows, but we digress. Billy Jack Haynes he just absolutely swole this guy. So early on, right, we see JJ Dillon. He's the pesky manager at ringside, and I love that this is in studio. This is one of those in studio matches where it's a very intimate setting. You know, you have the announcer, like the broadcast table kind of off to the side, and then you have kind of the three-way stands with fans, you know, like bleachers, basically. And they're pretty rabid throughout because this is 1985 and pro wrestling is real. But, you know, you get Thunderfoot, who tries to go with the early deep knee to the gut. Tries to do a few other things, and then quickly out of nowhere, Billy Jack Haynes just gorilla presses him like nothing. Just
I know.
And Thunderfoot's not like a small guy either, right? He's, I mean, he,
no,
you know,
no, he's tall. He's at least 6'4".
I mean, yeah, he's tall. He's, definitely like in the 6'2 to 6'4 range, kind of husky individual. Might explain why he was covering his whole body with a bodysuit.
Yeah, not the most fit guy compared to Billy Jack, who looks like a you know, an Adonis. He looks like Hercules. He looks like Lou Ferrigno in Hercules, basically.
Right, right. Mind you, I wear full coverage as well, but that's not important. and I'm not 6'3". But, just gorilla presses him and tosses him like nothing. And, you know, so Thunderfoot's trying to find other beings to get around him. It's not working. What I was really impressed with, aside from just his appearance, was Billy Jack Haynes' athleticism. You know, he's working the first part of this match kind of Steamboat-esque in that he's
totally
a lot of arm drags. He's working the arm. You know, he puts him in a hammer lock. He's really working that arm of Thunderfoot, who tries what he can to get out of it. You know, throwing him a couple shoulders in the ropes, and then, you know, hitting the ropes, and then Billy Jack Haynes is hitting him with flying tackles. There's a point where he does the test of strength, and clearly that's not any test to Billy Jack Haynes, who gets the test of strength, lowers Thunderfoot's hands to the mat, and instead of doing the step on the feet or a step on the hands kind of deal, he ends up locking Thunderfoot's head in between his knees and does the big jump and come back down on your feet, which I can only imagine is like a vibration of violent proportions on Thunderfoot's
head. Right.
You know what I mean? Just gave him complete vertigo and a concussion, wrapped up with a nice cherry on top of CTE.
I mean, legit, probably.
I mean, it's a really cool move. It's kind of funny, but it's I'm gonna start incorporating that move actually. But he just keeps getting the other. There's no test here. Like, Billy Jack Haynes is in control, firm control. He eventually gets Thunderfoot over to the corner, and at this time we see Raging Bull Manny Fernandez actually come out to ringside or to the commentary table. And talk about, you know, it's tough to see his friend, Billy Jack Haynes, basically having to contend with two people because he's got the dreaded Thunderfoot in the ring, and he's got J.J. Dillon snaking around on the outside to contend with as well. Mind you, Manny Fernandez isn't leaving the announcers or the commentators booth to do anything about it, but he just keeps talking about how it's tough to watch as a friend, you know, and he knows that Billy Jack Haynes will persevere and he'll make it through. And as this is going,
I wrote that down too.
Yeah, he takes Thunderfoot to the corner, and I thought it was a pretty interesting little heat spot. We see J.J. Dillon kind of reach between Thunderfoot's feet to grab Billy Jack Haynes' foot, and he kind of pulls it to where Haynes' leg is now kind of intertwined into Thunderfoot's leg, which causes the distraction, and then there's the cheap shot, and we're off and running with Thunderfoot getting the upper hand and kind of really laying the boots to him. He's doing all sorts of, you know, elbow drops and knee drops and doing what he can to kind of keep the big man grounded. And we still have Manny Fernandez talking about, see, this is what I'm talking about. I can't believe this. It's really hard for me to watch. You know, I'm, you know, 6 feet away, but I'm not going to do anything.
He keeps reminding everybody that if he and I were tag team partners, we'd storm the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, you don't appear to be the best tag team partner from 6-7 feet away, but we'll take your word for it, Manny. I have actually, ventured into, some nightclubs with Manny Fernandez before.
Really?
He was quite the character. I'll just say that. Yeah. For people who do independence on the Carolinas, everyone has a story about Manny Fernandez crashing a show and basically cornering the booker to just put him on the show and pay him, even if he wasn't booked at all. I mean, that's kind of the last reputation I heard of Manny Fernandez. But
well, that tracks with kind of what happens at the end of the match.
Right.
With their little interview segment.
But yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
So we see Thunderfoot go to the well one too many times. He had already given Billy Jack Haynes a backdrop earlier. He goes for it again. Billy Jack Haynes clubs him in the back, starts kind of booting his way back up. He's reviving himself, and then he's had enough, and now Thunderfoot knows that he's in trouble. And we start seeing a bit more of the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat kind of offense, in that you're getting some kind of martial arts maneuvers. Not so much chops or karate, but definitely in the posturing. It's kind of the...
Totally.
Right. And mind you, Billy Jack Haynes, after he did that head in the knees kind of head jacker thing earlier, he followed it up with an insane drop kick I forgot to mention, which was really cool. It actually kind of ended up looking kind of like a one-footed drop kick kind of thing, which was just very impressive again for the guy that dies. But nonetheless, he's actually making his comeback now. He's firing on all cylinders, gaining momentum, grabs him in kind of like a half Nelson waist lock combination, in which J.J. Dillon then hops up causes the distraction. Billy Jack Haynes leaves Thunderfoot to go see what, you know, I've had enough of this J.J. Dillon at ringside. Oh, another thing I forgot to mention, sorry, was during the heat, while Thunderfoot was applying some different holds, and his feet, you know, if he had Billy Jack Haynes in kind of like a rear naked chin lock or something, and he's, you know, laying down on the mat, you would see J.J. Dillon reaching across from under the bottom rope and putting his hand on the bottom of Thunderfoot's foot, as if that was giving Thunderfoot more leverage to apply.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was a very interesting kind of little cheat maneuver there. I hadn't seen that one before, of just, I'm going to give you a brace to kick back on so you can really choke this sucker out.
Hey, my son bought it. My son bought it because we watched this match together, and Bodie's like, why is he doing that? And I said, well, you see, he's pushing down on his foot. It's causing more pain to his opponent. He's like, oh, okay.
The leverage, I'm telling you. You can't contend with it.
Sold it.
Yeah, I thought it was neat. You know, he's firing back. We're not seeing this absurd series of false finishes or anything like that.
No.
We see the distraction. And as we're seeing the distraction, here's where we see where Thunderfoot gets his name. And he gets a breather, he creates some distance, and as the referee's back is turned and he's trying to settle the dispute between J.J. Dillon and Billy Jack Haynes, we see Thunderfoot loading the boot, as Shivani says it. He's loading the boot, in which he is tapping the toe of the all-black boot on the mat, and he's tapping it, which I can only imagine means he's knocking the metal piece that's in his boot down towards the toe area.
Yes.
He's kicking he's kind of knocking his toes on the mat. And this is when Manny Fernandez has had enough as a friendly spectator. And he goes down there and stooges off old Thunderfoot and lets the ref know, hey, he's loading his boot, to which I loved this, to which Thunderfoot then quickly reverses said, he starts unloading the boot and starts knocking his heel on the mat to get the metal back down to the back of his boot, just in case the ref were to check his toes, which he should have done early on, right? And Shivani has the line of the match, right, where he's going, he's getting rid of the load. He gets rid of the load.
After he had loaded the boot, get rid of the load.
So Thunderfoot is getting rid of the load here, but his own distraction causes him to get rolled up by Billy Jack Haynes. 1-2, matches over.
Hi, Ron!
Chance to slip in and get the pin on Thunderfoot. Now, right now, we're watching Thunderfoot, after he had loaded the boot, get rid of the load. And Billy Jack rolls him up. The winner on our Super Station Championship Challenge Series, Billy Jack Haynes.
Babyface is successful. We had some heel interference from J.J. Dillon, and then we had their comeuppance here as the Raging Bull Manny Fernandez came down to let the ref know, hey, 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 you know, he is loading up the boot. And now he is unloading the boot, but nope. Schoolboy, 1-2-3, Billy Jack Haynes is your winner. And as you mentioned, we are then brought into a live post-match interview, which I am a huge fan of, by the way. I think
same.
Post-match interviews need to be utilized at every opportunity, because, you know, it really catches the wrestlers as live as they can be, and they've got the adrenaline going, and they don't really need to think about, you know, what they're supposed to say or what the, you know, they just, it's a very raw kind of thing, and I really enjoy that. And then we also learn that that's why Billy Jack Haynes has the organ across his rear, across his Jean-Claude, because his father's in the hospital and he wanted him to know that he's thinking about him and he's always with him in spirit. And so that was a pretty neat, touching little babyface tribute point to the post-match interview. Now, did you get the impression here that, like, Manny Fernandez keeps saying, like, we should be a team. Like, we would be a team and we will really rock it. And, like, you know, you better watch out, you know, Anderson's and, like, nah, nah, nah. And then Billy Jack Haynes is kind of like, well, yeah, you know, and, like, I've actually got my partner. I'm trying to remember who he said.
I think it was Wahoo McDaniel.
Yeah, Wahoo McDaniel. That's right. That's right. Who brought him into the territory initially.
Because this was to hype up Starrcade 85, I believe.
Yes. Yes. So it's kind of comical. This a slight disregard to this this fantasy team that Manny Fernandez keeps kind of alluding to, and Billy Jack Haynes like, well, I've got my partner Wahoo McDaniel, and you know, we're gonna show you guys what it's all about, like, coming up, you know. So
yeah, because he keeps touting him like he's my good friend,
right?
And Billy Jack kind of doesn't blow him off, but he doesn't really give him a whole lot of, like,
yeah, it's
bro love, you know,
kind of strange. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like anything, like, as if they were setting up an angle, not that I recall.
Yeah, because I got the sense, I'm like, oh, this is where Manny's going to keep saying that and he's going to get jealous and turn on him. But I'm not too familiar with Manny Fernandez.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had his success in the Carolinas. Like, he was
for sure
definitely a main player for a bit. But nonetheless, you know, fun match. Had so many elements of what I love about pro wrestling. And in the end, it wraps itself up as a nice little morality play, right? When it's like, the cheaters never win, you know what I mean? It backfires. And
oh yeah, absolutely
glorious, you know. So, but boy, that loading and then unloading of the boot just gets me. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was hilarious. So yeah, fun little match, you know. Very enjoyable. And so then I was kind of perusing 1985 and thought, you know what, yeah, go ahead.
Before you get into that really quick, I was just going to say,
it's your Thunderfoot.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple things that I think are worth noting is the fact that when they cut to commercial a couple times, or the one time, they use the weirdest, like, freeze frame photo of JJ Dillon, like, side profile. You know, they're like, we'll be right back with this killer bumper music, by the way. The music is amazing. The music for Championship Wrestling is so great, but it's like the most awkward hot take photos that they just had. They're like, just go with what we got, you know?
Right. And I thought that was funny too, because in watching the match, see that part in the match where JJ Dillon's watching his, you know, his Thunderfoot competitor, kind of getting beat up. And I couldn't help but think that JJ Dillon had this look on his face, like as if he was just thinking to himself, like, what the hell is this Thunderfoot garbage? Like, this isn't going to go anywhere. This is so stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So
right.
Disappointed that he's associated with this gimmick.
Because the Horsemen hadn't been formed yet, right? The Horsemen had yet to be formed. They were about to be formed, I believe, right? Yeah.
I think you're right.
So that makes sense that he's kind of like this Bobby Heenan-esque manager.
Right.
And yeah, that was ridiculous. And then, yeah, obviously Manny with his, you know, not helping, but talking about how much he loves his buddy. And then I noticed, like, it looked like Billy Jack was about to put him in the full Nelson.
Right.
And I'm assuming that was
Nelson,
his,
like, around the waist, he grabbed him as well. I don't know what he was going to do.
Dance with him for a minute. No.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe the old Patriot Slam, Uncle Slam, or whatever that thing was called.
Well, the Uncle Slam.
Half Nelson into a big slam kind of deal.
I did love this match, though, strictly from the standpoint that it was so unexpected.
Right.
You know, And I'm like, oh, who's the guy under the mask? It's got to be a horseman. Like, I'm thinking, oh, it's is that Barry Windham? Or, you know, at the time, it was the original four, which was Ole and Arn and Rick and Tully. But they had not been formed yet. And I know that this was kind of setting up Starrcade with the return of Dusty. There's a cool little moment right before this match where they're kind of retelling how Dusty was injured and now he's going to be able to wrestle Flair at Starrcade, right? That was all great stuff. But the minute I see Paul's message to me saying, this is my match, Billy Jack Haynes versus Thunderfoot, I'm like, did T9 like mess up his spelling when he was texting it? Was it supposed to be like Thunderstruck or something? And it is Thunderfoot. And I'm like, oh God, this brought back memories to me because I went to Taos, New Mexico. I worked on the Pueblo in Taos, New Mexico, and spent a lot of time in Taos and with the indigenous tribe that lives on the land there, and really special stuff. I've talked about it before on previous episodes, but one of my first summers I went out to Taos. I went out with a couple, my former girlfriend at the time, and I went out with a couple, and we went up to the mountain in Taos. The Taos Mountain is beautiful, right? Super high elevation. Get up there and we find a waterfall, and the two of us start climbing the waterfall barefoot, you know. And then we hear thunder in the distance, and we see lightning maybe, I don't know, 100 feet away. And we're like, oh, shit, time to go. So we climb down the mountain. He was really, you know, booking it up the mountain. He comes down. We escape narrowly. The rain just starts hitting us out of nowhere. Flash, lightning storm. We luckily got down the mountain in time before nothing serious happened. And we go to the local diner for a bite. And I said, man, you were really trekking, Thunderfoot. And he goes, what did you say? And I go, Thunderfoot, you know? And he's like, I don't take kindly to nicknames. I barely knew this dude. And I'm like, oh, okay. I said, I meant it in an endearing way.
The other couple?
Sorry.
The guy, the other couple? Or
yeah, the boyfriend of the other couple. Wow. You know? And his girlfriend looks super uncomfortable.
He's like, yes. Yeah. He didn't take kindly to nicknames.
No.
The one as badass as Thunderfoot.
I know. I'm like, that's a good nickname, dude. I meant it in dear. I said, well, dude, I meant it in a good way.
Oh my God.
And he goes, when I was a child, my one leg was born shorter than the other.
No.
And over the course of several years, I had my leg extended. And, you know, a quarter of an inch at a time, surgery after surgery. I was teased. I was made fun of. And I'm like, I clearly did not know that.
How did you know that?
Thunderfoot.
there's another Portland wrestler who went by the name Scotty the Body.
Scotty the Body.
Guys as Raven today.
And yep, Scotty Flamingo.
Yeah, he was always rumored to have one foot longer than the other as well.
I believe I've seen matches when, as Raven, he had a boot that looked like he had an extra 2 inches on one side.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it's not that uncommon.
I had a student that had the same deal, but I doubt he carried this. Well, who knows? Who knows? He's like, that kid's probably 20 now. I don't think that kid was teased, but.
That's a pretty badass nickname. Like,
I think it is.
Right? I mean, that's a great way to cover up a weird kind of foot deficiency thing. Is I don't know. I love it.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. I tend to give only cool nicknames. So.
I agree. Yeah, as you should.
Could have called him Droopy Dog. I don't, you made it down the hill.
Gimp foot, you know, or something.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
Did you visit Dennis Hopper's grave when you were in Taos?
Did not, no, but I stayed in Georgia O'Keeffe's former home.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was pretty beautiful and pretty awesome. Yeah, I did not visit his grave. I don't think he hadn't passed at that point.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
We're going back to like 2000, I want to say 2 or 2003.
Oh, yeah, no, then he was probably prepping for Land of the Dead or something.
right. Oh, man.
Sure. Yeah, but Taos is great, man. That's a really funny story.
Taos is a gem. If anyone ever heads out to Taos, Michael's Kitchen is one of the best. That's funny. The guy's name is Michael. Michael's Kitchen is one of the best diners.
His name is Michael?
Yeah.
It's not the same guy?
Nope. Not Michael P.S. Hayes either. So.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. If that was the case, then, you know, who knows what happened to my girlfriend at the time. So.
Yeah. Check out Michael's Kitchen. Is it downtown in the square, the Pueblo there?
Michael's Kitchen is on the main drag in downtown Taos. The Pueblo has been there for over 2,000 years. It's like one of the few landmarks in our country that's still standing. And the special thing about it is, you know, the Spanish came in and the Taosanos fought against them and they kind of formed like an alliance. They ended up working together. And then the United States military rolls in. And the Spanish and the Taosanos fought them off and got them away from their land.
Oh, wow.
And their sacred mountain, their Blue Mountain, one of the few good things that Richard Nixon did, because it was acquired by the United States military or government, he gave it back to them when he was in office.
Oh, wow.
Around the same time he formed the EPA, believe it or not. So Nixon did do some fairly good things as well. So
yeah.
That was one of them. But anyways, their sacred Blue Mountain is where their ancestors go when they pass. And I was able to go up there. Very special. I could tell you stories, man. I could tell you stories offline of things I did in Taos.
I love Taos. There's such a sacred energy to the ground, to the ground, the dirt. I mean, everything just has such an energy to it that I really, really loved going there. And
they call it the Taos hum, actually, because you can hear it and feel it. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. That's going back to Hopper, that's where he lived for many years after Easy Rider. And he lived in the Dodge Llewellyn house and ended up buying the cinema. I'm trying to remember what the name of the little cinema house was, but he's buried in Rancho de Taos, which is just on the outskirts of Taos. But anyways, that's
just beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, he was living there when he had just completed filming the last movie. And so he would edit it at this little cinema, I think during the week. And then he would play cartoons for the kids in the village for free on the weekends or something. But
that's awesome.
That's where he edited the last movie and then turned in his cut that was 40 hours long. And the studio was like, how much cocaine did y'all do in Peru when you were making?
Right.
You know how we said carte blanche? We didn't mean it. We take it all back. You were out of your mind. You were officially blacklisted from Hollywood for a while.
Right. For a little while, for sure.
Come back with Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 for canon later on in life.
And crushed it. Absolutely crushed it. One of the best sequels.
I agree.
I can't say it's better because it's totally different. It is a different. It's like Alien and Aliens.
Right.
Texas Chainsaw is literally what it is.
Right, right. Toby Hooper had himself a laugh.
Yeah, my God.
Speaking of cinema.
Yeah, so back to 1985.
Can you guess what the number one movie at the box office was at this time?
Shit. Is this like our repeat of our contest we had on? I'm going to say Back to the Future, 1985.
Close. Although Back to the Future was number 5 at the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this is November. You're talking November of 85?
Yeah, this is November of 85.
Not Gremlins, right?
No, but I'll give you a hint.
That was 84.
The number one movie was the fourth film in this series.
Really? Friday the 13th?
I wish. No, unfortunately.
Yeah. Fourth film in this series, Superman 4?
Oh, no. Come on.
Fourth film in the series. Wow. Nightmare on Elm Street, 1985. It's too soon.
Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, was number 10.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Yes, I have the top 10 listed here. I'll give you a hint. This will.
Oh, Police Academy 4.
Come on. Now you're just throwing in the towel.
Like, I'm trying, man.
You're loading up the wrong. You're unloading the boot on purpose.
He's unloading his boot.
I'll just put it this way. We had an iconic film which pitted America versus Russia.
Oh, Rocky IV.
Rocky IV was number one at the box office.
Yes, that was like celebrate Thanksgiving. Go see Rocky IV.
Be proud to be an American. Living in America, James Brown. The second number two at the box office was the third of this film series and starred a canon mainstay. I'll say that.
Death Wish 3?
Yes. Death Wish 3.
With Charlie Bronson. Goddamn Bronson.
Yeah, so I'll just list them off. So yeah, we had Rocky 4 was at the top of the box office, followed by Death Wish 3, followed by Jagged Edge at number 3.
Starring Jeff Bridges and Glenn Close.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that one I wasn't as familiar with. Number 4 was To Live and Die in L.A.
One of the best soundtracks of all time by Wang Chung.
Seriously, and still very foretelling of modern times.
Yep, love that movie.
Then we had Your Back to the Future at 5.
Which is wild because I think it came out in the summertime.
Probably, yeah, but it had stayed in the top 10 throughout, right? And then at number 6, there was a movie called Target, which I was not familiar with.
I believe Target is with Matt Dillon and maybe Gene Hackman. It's like a spy espionage movie. Yeah, I think that's what it is. And this is a hot take, but I'm not a really big fan of Matt Dillon.
Unless it's Something About Mary.
Well, yeah, later Matt Dillon, later like self, not self-conscious, wanting to be cool all the time, Matt Dillon.
Right. Yeah. Pre-Wild Things, Matt Dillon. Number 7 was Commando, the ever quotable Commando, right?
Classic Father's Day film.
What is a top 10 without Schwarzenegger? Right. Number 8 was King Solomon's Mines.
With, what is his face from, Alan Quartermain.
Yeah, Richard Chamberlain, right?
Richard Chamberlain, yeah.
Right. And then at number 9, we had the ever so young Jim Carrey.
Once Bitten.
That's it.
A great movie.
And then
not great. It's a fun movie.
It is so fun. I really enjoy that film. And then we had Freddy's Revenge, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, rounding it off at number 10. So
wow. Which is way ahead of its time as far as dealing with homosexual undertones,
right,
and
right, absolutely. That is considered the gay Freddy film, which
I mean it is totally
out on its own completely. Yeah, it's
the female actor in Once Bitten, I believe her name's Karen Coppins or something like that. She was also in Jake Speed.
Okay. See, it wraps around. It all makes sense.
I knew you'd find a way to keep it connected.
You're so mousy.
I am.
And that is 1985, November 9th, 1985, Billy Jack Haynes versus Thunderfoot for NWA Crockett Promotions.
Wow. What a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Mine's slightly different. Mine's slightly different.
Slightly.
But the connection being lightning bolts.
Yes.
And I guess Jim Crockett too, because this is an interesting story. We'll just get into my match, right?
Let's do it. Let's jump in with lightning bolts.
My match is the Lightning Express versus the Manster, Rick Steiner, and quote, every man's nightmare, Sting, with Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert. How hot of a take is that to hear every man's nightmare, Sting, and Manster, Rick Steiner, right? This is from the UWF, June 6, 1987 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I'm sure we'll talk more about this in later episodes, but the UWF was a Bill Watts organization. It was Mid-South, and it got rebranded.
Right.
In 1986 by Bill Watts. It lasted about a year. They tried to compete with WWF. So WWF bought TV time on TBS. Took their slot, basically. And there's lots of folk tales about this, of Vince McMahon coming to Turner Broadcasting Television for a cup of coffee and doing his show. And then, so I did not know that Mid-South got rebranded as UWF. I thought it was his own territory, which it is, but it came out of Mid-South.
That is great.
It's not to be confused with the UWF in 1990, which was a different organization, which was, I believe, Herb Abrams.
Right.
Yes, Herb Abrams.
Abrams.
Ugh. Failed production. It was the one where Bruno Sammartino's like, the UWF is going to be great. There's no steroids at all. You're not going to see guys having heart attacks because of steroids. It's going to be clean. That's how they marketed the UWF.
Oh.
You're like, whoa. Okay. Anyways, so UWF is around, and kind of the guy who was a big piece of the UWF was Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. He was a heel, and his team consisted of Rick Steiner, who was a newbie at the time. He was pretty much up and coming. This is before he joined the Varsity Club. And he was called the Manster. And he wore two different colored boots like he did as Rick Steiner. But he wore Zubaz pants, shorts.
Right.
And for those of you that don't know what Zubaz shorts are or pants, go to our social media. Go to our Instagram and I'll post some pictures of Rick Steiner in his Zubaz shorts.
Right.
And a young up-and-coming Steve Borden, a.k.a. Sting, who was a heel at the time.
Yes.
He entered the UWF with Jim Hellwig, the Dingo Warrior, as the Blade Runners. But later, obviously, Jim Hellwig went to the WWF and Sting stayed, continued to be a heel, and tag-teamed with Rick, which is wild. The Lightning Express, I should have got to them first. It's Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner. Tim Horner, he was in the WWF for a while. He would win jobber matches in the WWF. Like, he would wrestle other jobbers and win. That's how I was introduced to him. Little guy, but so fast and so quick, and just had, he kind of looked like that generic make-a-wrestler kind of dude, but he was so good. So good on his feet. Had the little lightning bolt on his tights. His biggest kind of claim to fame was with his tag team partner, Brad Armstrong. Brad Armstrong is from the famed Armstrong family. His father, Bob Armstrong, was a wrestler. Scott Armstrong, Steve Armstrong, and of course, Jesse James, road dog Jesse James Armstrong. Brad Armstrong, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinion, is probably the best kind of mid-card, quote, job wrestler around. He wrestled under a mask a few times as Arachnoman and Bad Street, which was the Freebirds, as the Freebirds were kind of falling, as they were like winding down, he came in as Bad Street and under a mask. And like, why does that guy look so cool? But he's losing all the time. I know who that is. Wait, that's Brad Armstrong? He was known as the Candyman Brad Armstrong, a stupid gimmick. Stupid, poor guy. Anyways, he had a lot of different names, but as the Lightning Express, he and Tim Horner were on fire. And they wrestled Sting and Steiner, who were the UWF Tag Team Champions. And this is a great, so I have a lot to talk about on this episode itself fully, because this episode is filled with a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
It is, you get the sense, it's like a low rent version of what the WWF was doing so well with their vignettes, with their music videos. They were, UWF was really trying. They just didn't have the budget or the minds behind this stuff, right? But on commentary is Jim Ross and Magnum TA. Magnum TA, in this point, he still had his arm in a sling from his injury.
Okay.
Right. And I love how the match starts where the Lightning Express is introed with their combined weight. And then when they get to Sting, they introduce Sting and he's given his weight and they say, and Rick Steiner. They're like, first, and their opponents, well, I'll just play the whole clip. You hear it's hilarious because they're like, and Rick Steiner. Like, and the other guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing first to my left, from Marietta, Georgia, and Knoxville, Tennessee, at the combined weight of 458 pounds, the Lightning Express, Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner. To my right, accompanied by Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, the current UWF World Tag Team Champions, at 265 pounds, Forever Man's Nightmare, Sting! And Rick Steiner. This match for the UWF World Tag Team Championship, special one fall, 30-minute time limit.
Mike Wilson completes his introductions. Mike Wilson, on the staff of Big Country 1170 here in Tulsa, KVOO Radio. Special hello there to my good friend Billy Parker.
Anyways, the guy who does the announcing, apparently he's a local radio station DJ because Jim Ross shouts him out. He knows, like, his good old buddy, because this is JR country, right?
Yeah.
The referee is Tommy Gilbert, which is Eddie Gilbert's dad. We are going to get to Eddie Gilbert down the road because he's, God, the guy's legendary. His dad is the senior official, and Jim Ross kind of speculates as to the controversy around that. And I love that Jim Ross says, don't go to the refrigerator on this one because it's going to be on another plane. Right. And it is, I think, you know, it's a back and forth tight match. Lightning Express is their name. They're so quick. Arm drag, drop kicks. Sting is like the big heavy. Sting and Steiner are just two meaty dudes. And there are a lot of bear hugs, you know, choke holds and just like, a lot of like wear down moves. I don't know another way to explain it. And then in between, like the first maybe 10 minutes of this match are kind of a back and forth. And then you go to a commercial. And you go to a commercial for the laser beam wristwatch.
Yeah, the quartz crystals.
Where it has electronic pulses of light, right? And because the match on the link I sent Paul and the link we have in the show notes, it's the full episode with commercial breaks, which is so fantastic for 1987. You come back from commercial with a really weird music video. And you're like, where are we going with this? You see these dudes who look like kind of Toto-esque, and they start jamming out this song in a really odd way. And it goes into Thin Lizzy's Boys Are Back in Town. And it's Michael P.S. Hayes singing the song.
Yes.
Guess who just got back? To say, but man, I still think they've got some crazy. They'll ask if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town, boys are back in town.
They have clips of him in the ring, but all the clips are of him being an idiot. Yeah. Like he falls into the ring in one point. He gets slapped by a woman that he's coming on to, and cut back to him in the studio with this band singing. And he's like sticking his tongue out and like mugging for the camera.
Going
and
for
like,
it.
What is going on with this? There's a sign that the fans are holding up. It says Prissy Sissy. And I'm just like, what is going on here? It's an amazing music video. You all have to watch it. Come back to the match. And, you know, very methodical textbook wrestling match, a lot of arm bars, like I said, wear down moves. And then it's announced during the match that Jim Ross says there's new rules in this match. You're allowed one save. So basically, If your partner's in a pinning predicament, you can save them one time in the match, which at the time this was a big deal, right? Because at this same time, I think the NWA still maintained the rule that if you throw your opponent over the top rope, you're disqualified.
Automatic disqualification.
Yeah, which I kind of like. I kind of like the just the added stipulations of like making it a little bit more riskier.
Sure.
In some matches. The pacing was interesting because it would go like really fast back and forth, and then it would slow down with a rest hold, you know, for a break. And I wasn't sure if that was for the betterment of Steiner and Sting. Definitely not for Lightning Express, because those guys could just keep going. At one point towards the finale of this match, which is about a 24-minute match, Sting goes for a splash off the top rope and misses. He slips. And Ross mentions that his knee might be injured at this point, which is really interesting because, as we all know, famously or infamously, Sting was supposed to wrestle Flair a few years later for the title, but he injured his knee coming down to the ring, and that really derailed everything for several months. Don't be surprised if one of their matches comes up, because I love it so much. So at this point, he falls off onto the ring. Horner and Armstrong are back and forth in this match throughout, but at this point, Horner is the one who's reaching for Armstrong, tags in Armstrong. A melee ensues, and all four wrestlers are going at it. At one point, Tommy Gilbert is distracted by Horner and Steiner, and that's when Eddie Gilbert gets in the ring with his boot, takes off his cowboy boot, and he's got his cowboy boots outside of his pants. So his pants are tucked into his boots. That's always a bad sign. That's a good heel.
That's a badass way to wear it. That's the style.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
You would know. You're from Texas. So
I mean, even, yeah, Warrior, everyone wore that style. Kerry Von Erich, everyone had the bleached jeans tucked into the cowboy boot, man. You know,
that's true. But he had suspenders on.
That's true.
And instead of, I'm not a big suspender guy.
Yeah.
But so Eddie Gilbert goes for the heel move to hit Armstrong with his boot, but he misses and he hits Sting instead, knocking Sting out. Armstrong goes for the pin, gets the 1-2-3, and the Lightning Express win the UWF tag team titles.
And now Horner knocking Steiner back outside.
And what's this? What's Eddie Gilbert up to now? Now, as if his men can't control the battle, now he's in there. And now turning around. Unbelievable. Eddie Gilbert's gone to the floor. He's knocked his own man senseless. We've got a 1-2-3.
We got
the new world tag team champions right here. The Lightning Express, the new UWF world tag team champions. Unbelievable, Jim Ross.
Gilbert's plan backfired. And what we have right here on the Universal Wrestling Federation is you are looking at the new world tag team champions, the Lightning Express. They're going to the throne room. The trophy case will be filled with championship belts.
What an unbelievable matchup this has been. The action has been fast-paced, grueling from the very beginning. Everybody is on their feet here in this arena. This is the most exciting match I've ever witnessed ringside my whole entire life. New World Tag Team Champions right here. Brad Armstrong, Tim Horn, the Lightning Express has definitely made their mark here in the Universal Wrestling Federation.
Horner and Armstrong. I'll tell you what, Horner's jubilation here on Universal Wrestling Federation. The young men, they said, Jim, we just want a chance. We just want a chance to go for it. They have gone all the way. Horner and Armstrong have gone the distance, and they are the new UWF World Tag Team Champions, and we've got more coming your way after this timeout.
A bunch of wrestlers come out from the back, many of who I don't recognize. One of them, though, is Steve Cox, and the only reason I bring that up is Steve Cox was kind of shoved down our throats as being like a really like the next big thing. I even have an 8x10 photo in a world. I have a bunch of world class programs, right? Like stadium programs. And there's a bunch of 8x10 photos of him in those programs. Like, why?
You got to get rid of these.
You got to. It's a big win for the Lightning Express. It would be their only title win, sadly enough. They would continue to wrestle. You know, obviously Armstrong and Horner would go on to wrestle in the NWA and WCW. And at one point they were brought back together as a tag team. They were kind of, they would job out a lot, unfortunately. But this was their shining moment. This is maybe their biggest moment ever. Unfortunately, Brad Armstrong's no longer with us, but Tim Horner is. He's like a congressman or like city commissioner.
Yeah,
in his hometown, I believe. His hometown of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Of course.
In the Hamblin County. He's a commissioner from the 13th District. So God bless him. He's still doing his thing. He was known as Star Blazer and Kendo the Samurai, by the way.
Oh.
I'm probably under a mask. But this was their big win. This was their big moment. This would start the storyline of Sting turning face. And Sting would eventually win the television title after the UWF was absorbed by the NWA and World Championship Wrestling, et cetera, et cetera. About a year later, actually, the UWF pretty much dissolved and became, you know, a part of Jim Crockett Promotions. Jim Crockett bought them, and the rest is history for, sadly, the UWF. But the match is pretty wild, and I'm really curious about your take. What's your take on the Lightning Express versus the Manster, Rick Steiner, and Sting, every man's nightmare?
Man, the Manster. Not to be confused with the Man-Witch.
yeah. And Jim Ross, by the way, calls him the Manster in the match. He's like, he's the Manster. I'm like,
yeah, he's really trying to get over, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, say what you will about Jim Ross. I mean, he really has a way to just add so much excitement and knowledge.
Especially 80s Jim Ross.
Yeah, yeah. He was really great. I think, and I don't know, maybe it was because he was, you know, in Oklahoma and he just had that extra juice going on him, knowing like, I'll make it home tonight.
Right.
And but yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. You know, early on they stress, you know, the Tommy Gilbert as the referee and his dastardly son on the outside, and Jim Ross is, you know, why don't you just send him to the back, just send him into the back, you know? And that didn't happen. Right. So
Eddie Gilbert even comes over and talks to Jim Ross and Magnum TA at one point.
Oh, that's right,
about how messed up this match is and the rules and everything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised when he sent it to me. I was like, heel Sting. Okay, like this is
different.
A really good friend of mine, actually, his name's Rick Bassman. He's the one who discovered Steve Borden and Jim Helwig as they became the Blade Runners. He was like their first manager. So,
wow, weren't they in WCCW for World Class initially, and then they moved over to UWF?
Where he was, yeah, Dingo Warrior, and then, yeah, the Blade Runners. And,
wow.
Pretty cool, yeah. I'll actually be working with Rick in September on a very big show, which I will reveal more about as my passport clears itself. don't want to say too much just yet. But yeah, I was really impressed with it. I was, you know, this is, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, I had worked briefly with Tim Horner at WWE when he came in as a producer for a short amount of time. They brought him in as an agent, and I don't feel like he got a fair shake because we all liked him. He was a really nice guy and helpful, but I feel like he didn't feel like he had the leeway to really assert himself. Like, he was fearful he might step on some toes or so. I don't really know what the situation ended up being, but we all liked him. We thought he was really good guy and had really good knowledge. And then, you know, obviously we worked with Scott Armstrong. He was another agent at the time. I don't know that I ever met Brad, but I always marveled at his glorious mullet. I thought he had one of the greatest mullets in professional wrestling history.
I totally agree. And it was his mullet and the way he punched, the way he threw his punches.
Yes.
He had this, it was almost like a slap punch, but it looked so, it was so fluid,
right,
the way he moved.
He was always in the best shape. I think he was the best shape, in the best shape of all.
Totally.
Nothing against Bullet Bob, who is great, in great shape for his age especially. But yeah, I think you touched on it earlier where, you know, initially it does start off a little slow. There's some back and forth and pretty solid tag team match overall.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, you obviously had the veterans kind of leading the younger, newer, more jacked and potentially dangerous wrestlers.
Yeah, because Rick Steiner hits some of those signature moves that he's known for clothesline wise, and you're like, dude, you're gonna hurt somebody with that.
Yeah, and he also has mismatching knee pads in addition to things. Yeah, it's a weird outfit. It's a bit of a throw together. You wonder if his gear got lost at the airport. But yeah, it's I enjoyed the match, you know. I did get a kick out of Sting. It's as though he's jumping up to the second rope as if he was going to turn into a cross body.
Yeah.
And his foot slips off the second rope and he takes a tumble. And, you know, happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
Certainly happens to the worst of us, but definitely happens to the best of us.
I think it's covered fairly well, by the way.
But I think I love those moments in a professional wrestling match because it immediately becomes as real as possible.
Yes.
You know, and it's a real testament to the guys you're in there with on how they cover it, or how they will expose it if they're inexperienced. And so obviously,
right,
Sting and Rick Steiner had the benefit of being in there with two veterans who could cover it well. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it, you know, especially as having been a tag team wrestler. I really enjoyed especially like Brad Armstrong coming in with the House of Fire. And I felt like, you know, the heel team did a good job of kind of cutting the ring in half and doing that thing. I liked that, you know, Eddie Gilbert didn't really, he was there and you knew he was there, but he didn't quite, he didn't get over involved,
yeah.
You know, and that helps because then when he really does get involved, it means so much more, right? Because
right,
sitting here thinking like, oh, I'm waiting for this guy to like get involved. Like, why? I'm surprised he doesn't get involved. Oh, like this is true. Was it? Okay, he's gonna cheat here. No, he's still not getting really involved. And it's like, okay, here it comes, big boot. Here we go. Oh, it backfired again. Morality play, right? Which pro wrestling at its finest is a nice little morality play.
I appreciate that though, because it makes it that much more important when he does interfere.
Sure.
Like, he has faith in his team. And at that point he realizes his team's not going to get the job done and he needs to get it done for them.
Right. Right. Are you saying JJ Dillon didn't have all the faith in the world in Thunderfoot?
Sadly, sorry. Sorry, Thunder.
I
don't take kindly to nicknames.
Yeah. What'd you say? Tim Hortons or Tim Horner's, not to be confused with Timmy Hortons and for our Canadian listeners, not related. Tim Horner does not own a donut shop.
No, Tim Horner does not.
What was his like space binder or what was
Star Blazer and Kendo the Samurai?
Star Blazer. That's a badass gimmick. I mean,
I think that's pretty badass, actually.
You should have called all Michael. You should have been like, well, if you don't like Thunderfoot, what about Star Blazer?
Sure beats Candyman.
Oh, yeah.
Brad Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
Candyman. Actually, Brad Armstrong's other aliases, his other ring names, Buzzkill, Dos Hombres, Fantasia, Freedom Fighter, Mr. R, and Armstrong's Avenger. Oh, and BA, of course. badass.
You sure Armstrong's towing isn't in there somewhere?
Right. Armstrong's plumbing. He was trained by his dad, by the way, Bob Armstrong. Tim was trained by Jack and Jerry Briscoe and Rick Connors.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's a really textbook tag team match. The crowd is hot throughout.
So hot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was really refreshing to see Sting, not just so early on in his career, but as a heel. I'm partial to Joker Sting much later on in his career.
How dare you? No, it's not.
I swear.
Are you serious?
It's my favorite Sting because it just seems so obvious that he stayed up late after midnight mass or something. And was flipping through the channels and stumbled upon the Dark Knight, and just this giant light bulb went off in his head. He was like, "How has nobody ever done this?" You know, and I feel like it was, you know, a good 5 years after the Dark Knight had come out. I was like, "This is how has nobody jumped on this? This is perfect.
This is perfect."
Yeah, and I feel like he had the same kind of epiphany after watching The Crow. As well.
Yes.
You know? So, but Joker Sting is, how can you not? It's amazing.
Come on.
Oh, come on. Seriously. I mean, like direct quotes and everything. Like he has no shame. It's great. I love it.
I appreciate that you love it. This is, but he'll always be Surfer Sting to me. Damn.
Oh, Rat Tail?
Yes, of Heather course.
Park Rat Tail? Come on. Yeah. Oh no!
Oh, with RoboCop, he tag team with RoboCop.
That's true. That's a tough one to beat.
We may need to do a gimmick match when we get to October. We may need to do gimmick matches for October.
Oh, we're definitely doing gimmick matches.
We could do Trick or Treat, and it could either be like a swerve match, or it can be just a full on, you know. Gimmick match.
Yeah, but we can't pick Yeti.
No, and we can't do the ding dongs. So
yeah.
And that's because it's gotta stay within our wheelhouse.
That's true. We're soaking up the 80s here.
I was gonna say too about Sting at this stage of his career, it is interesting to see what would become. Like he seems green. He seems fairly green. Oh. However, you see what he like. The crowd is hot for him. The crowd still loves him.
Yeah, that's true. He just has a visual charisma to him, a presence for sure. Even though I think all four people in this match have a presence of their own, Tim Horner probably the least of the four. You know, as you mentioned earlier, slightly generic, but still a solid worker who definitely knows what he's doing.
I love him, and don't get me wrong, I say generic, but I love him in the most way. Like those two guys, yeah. I loved.
Yeah, I mean that really works too for the territories because they're relatable. They're very relatable, yeah. You know, and that, I think they're guys that the audience look at and be like, I know someone just like him, or he reminds me of your Uncle Jed, or like, you know, whoever it might be. And are you sure he doesn't have a towing company? Because he looks awfully familiar.
Isn't it called Star Blazer Towing or something?
Calm down, Thunder.
I mean, look. We are going to get to Flying Brian Pillman in the 80s because it was just as a kid, I loved the guy that looked like the hero. He just looked like that Luke Skywalker type, you know? And I don't know. It's so funny because my son loves the villain looking dude, you know?
Really?
More colorful. And, yeah. And I'm like, but don't you like the good guy? No. I'm like, okay.
Oh, might have a heel turn on your hands.
I know.
Keep an eye on him.
Could have a yin to that yang, you know, I guess. So.
Yeah. It's just a fun match. Very fun tag team match. Lots of great work from both sides. And for all you Sting lovers out there, it's a real nice throwback to Sting before he really blew up. You know,
when he blew up as the Joker.
I think so. I think
it's showtime.
Yeah, it's like a dog running after cars or whatever the hell he.
I will give him tremendous credit for that though, because he went a direction I did not expect in TNA.
Sure.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean he's still going. He's still going.
Sure is.
So I think he's in his 60s and he's still going.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's where Scott Steiner was at this time in life.
So I don't think Scotty hadn't come into the fold just yet. I think he didn't come in. And it's so interesting because I'm like, the Steiners were around in the mid 80s, right? No, they didn't premiere until I think like 1988. Wow. I don't think they made their I don't think Scott arrived until, because I believe it was the Guts and Glory pay-per-view, Clash that we talked about before with the Funk Steamboat match.
Right.
I believe that was one of the first appearances of Scott Steiner.
Okay.
Where Rick had recently, because they wrestled the Varsity Club. Rick had just left the Varsity Club. I believe he came into the NWA with Hot Stuff and Missy, but then he joined Kevin and the Varsity Club.
Nice.
Man, what a faction that was. And then soon after, I think it was like 88, feel like it's 88 when Scott started, but obviously we will cover the Steiners at some point. I almost picked one of their matches for this, but we'll get to Scotty.
Yeah.
When they were in their heyday.
Right. No, this was a solid pick. I really enjoyed it. So
I'm glad. I wanted to go a little outside the box.
Oh, you did.
As you did with your Thunderfoot. All right. I've got three facts from from 1987 that are all somewhat connected. 1987 was a great year for movies, but also a great year for movie soundtracks. In June of 87, the La Bamba soundtrack came out.
Oh, wow.
Featuring Los Lobos on many tracks, but also Marshall Crenshaw as Buddy Holly, Brian Setzer. It's actually one of my favorite soundtracks of all time is the La Bamba soundtrack.
Yeah, it's great. How to buy that?
I thought you were going to say, what does he say? What is that? What's Richie's brother say? Isai Morales, where he's like,
what was there to say? It's not my first or my last.
Richie! Not that famous line.
Classic. So good in that. Isai Morales is really the standout. I mean, that movie is groundbreaking.
Sure.
I think I saw it twice in the theater, but I love me some La Bamba and the soundtrack. The same week that this match premiered, The Untouchables came out in the theater.
Okay.
Brian De Palma's The Untouchables with a young Kevin Costner.
Wow.
Kevin Costner, Robert De Niro, Sean Connery, Andy Garcia.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, that is Billy Drago, you know?
It's iconic. Gangster.
Ennio Morricone did the soundtrack for that.
Can't compare. He's amazing.
Ennio Morricone's soundtrack to the Untouchables that so good.
I'm gonna have to revisit that one.
Did you see it in the theater?
No, I would have been 7, and I think I was more concerned with seeing Masters of the Universe, possibly.
Fair. I saw so many movies that I probably should not have seen.
Yeah.
Actually, Dustin and I have said 1987 might be the best year for 80s movies, the most underrated.
Really?
Yeah. I think so.
Is that Nightmare on Elm Street 3?
I believe so. But think about it. Like, North Shore came out that year. North Summer School.
Howley. Beat it, Cook. You mainlander. Beat it, Howley.
Last thing I'll say about 1987, there were a lot of great video games that came out that year, and I know we'll cover other 87 matches, but I will say the video game Contra came out in 1987. Oh, man.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, A, B, slug, start.
One of the iconic theme songs.
Limited guys, unlimited players. For those,
oh, so good.
Isn't that nuts? You can remember a cheat code to a video game from 87. I mean, it's similar to like remembering certain friends' phone numbers, you know,
yeah,
or your, like your ex's phone numbers or something. Like, for you young listeners, you Gen Zers, Gen Millennials, we had to memorize a lot of these phone numbers. We had to either write them down or memorize them. And when you got to what was known as a payphone, you had to throw in a quarter or call collect and hope that your friends would answer. And if you happened to not hang up in time and you got the answering machine, well, you lost your quarter. I'm letting you know right now, but you had to memorize these phone numbers, so you spoiled little brats. I'm just going to say that right now with your foggy, lame memories, because you couldn't remember these numbers. Believe me, it was a skill. It was a skill, like tag team wrestling, like loading your boot, okay? Like growing a curly, wonderful Tennessee waterfall mullet.
Oh, the best. It was a permed waterfall mullet. It was, guys, go look at the image I posted for this episode. It is Brad Armstrong, BA, personifies his image. Badass. Badass to the
that
to
was,
the max.
BA Baracus stood for, right? Mr.
But it did.
Yeah.
It did. And then my brother's like, no, it stands for bare ass. And then he'd flash
Claude's me. Gimmick. Come on.
It was. Hey, do you want to see? Yeah, I'll do it again.
Please, Mr. Golan, Mr. Globus, I really have come to this country. I really want to be an action star. We think you need to have more sex appeal. You cannot just be Splits guy and Karate guy. I will think of something. I really think maybe my audience would like to see my bare ass. What do you think? Okay, we try it in Lionheart. We'll give it a shot.
Yeah, go. Put on this singlet that will later be popularized by Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. Go put it on. Who's Kurt? Is this someone I need to look out for? Is it Kurt McKinney from No Retreat, No Surrender? Because that guy, you know that guy, he's dangerous.
He's
hungry.
He's filming The Last Kumite, or they just finished filming The Last Kumite.
I know. With this jacked up samurai guy.
Don't give me a story on that. Anyways, yeah.
I know. I'm like Cynthia, because, you know, we've had Cynthia Rothrock on the show a couple times now. She's a friend of the show. And
nice.
And I'm like, Cynthia, come on.
Yeah.
This guy.
It'll be interesting. Mateus Hughes.
Love that dude. I come in peace.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. Made his debut in No Retreat, No Surrender 2 with Cynthia Rothrock. Not her debut, but she was in that film.
Sure did. Kurt, well, you know, we interviewed Kurt McKinney on the show, and he's a friend of the show as well. We have our T-shirt, of course, the $2 late fee T-shirt.
Nice.
I get better T-shirt. I get better is obviously his, you know, line from No Retreat, No Surrender. Well, we're still looking for RJ. I'm trying to hunt down RJ.
Man, yeah.
We will get him someday.
He's eating an ice cream cone at the park while somebody does.
Sitting on.
You'd have to just go see that training montage.
While sitting on some guy's lap, crotch. And
yeah, doing some.
I mean, that's an insane workout, though.
Yeah, if you guys don't think you balancing yourself across your upper back and your ankles across two benches while doing pelvic thrusts up and down, whilst having your breakdancing buddy with Jerry Curls and his chocolate ice cream cone or something? What was it?
I believe so.
Yeah, sitting right on your crotch. If you don't think that's a tough workout, then you don't know anything. Okay, try it.
Then you don't know Star Blazer.
You don't know Blazer or Tim Hortons donuts.
Well, on that note, thank you everybody for listening. Hey, you know, this is the precursor to our upcoming month of Ruskies.
Ooh.
The next episode of $2 Late Fee will be our Ruskies episode. Dustin's brother Lance will be joining us to talk about the 1987 film Ruskies. And we have an upcoming, the star of Ruskies, Whip Hubley from Top Gun and Executive Decision. He's going to be our guest that month. And we got a lot of stuff planned. So anyways, go to our social media. Consider signing up for our Patreon so you can play trivia like Paul and I did the other night or the other month.
Yeah.
And it was so close. It was back and forth, back and forth.
It was.
But yeah, join our Patreon. Sign up and support the show. It would really mean a lot. And if you have signed up, thank you guys so much. Thank you all for listening. Thank you once again, Paul, for a fantastic discussion and
it was my pleasure.
Trip down memory lane.
Thank you, Zach. This is always what I look forward to the most. And I'm always welcome to accept any kind of nicknames from you. I know that they're all in good meaning.
You take kindly to nicknames.
I do. Yeah, I do take kindly to them, actually. But, you know, there's all these great ones are taken. I wouldn't feel right about being Thunderfoot or Stargazer. Was it Stargazer or was it
Starblazer? Oh, Starblazer.
Maybe I could be Stargazer. Maybe.
I think Stargazer is, you know, just get a solid silver onesie and with lightning bolts on it.
Yeah, and I'll come out with a big telescope and I'll be the Stargazer.
Add 2 inches to one boot and just be like, he's dropping a load in his boots or what? I don't know. What is it?
After he had loaded the boot, get rid of the load.
He's loading the boot. He's getting a load.
He's getting lots of download there. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Until next time.
Here
we go.
We are so thankful. Thank y'all for listening. Check out these matches or you'll get some nicknames you won't know. That's right.
Listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four...
Is it a five-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a five-star rating on iTunes. We really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.